Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY, community radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics I've chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. You can also catch the show at 8 a.m. on the third Monday, and our show and every show at KRFY is on your radio at 88.5 or can be streamed at krfy.org from anywhere in the world. Additionally, you can listen to a podcast of the show at krfy.org and select podcasts. Currently, the monthly topics I've chosen to discuss highlight the medical designations for each month. Since this is February, I'm very excited to announce that this show is the beginning of year two for Medical Musings. Last year, our inaugural show featured February's Heart Month, so for 2025, I'm focusing on cardiac rehabilitation. My guests here today are Lori Morris, RN, the program manager at North Idaho Cardiac Rehabilitation, and Rebecca Chloe, registered dietitian or cardiac dietitian. I'm so happy to have you on our show today to discuss this all-inclusive program for improved health. Lori and Rebecca, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
I'm Lori Morris. I have been an RN for a long time, 30 years. I started out in ICU, and then my career moved into cardiac rehab the last 20. So I went from one end of the spectrum of taking care of people with these heart events to now more teachable moments where we can focus on preventing future incidents and events through reducing risk factors. So I've been doing this for about 20 years, and about 4 years ago, we opened up an intensive cardiac rehab here in Sandpoint.
So very good. Rebecca.
Yes. Hi. My name is Rebecca Chloe, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I've been working in cardiac care for a while, but I'm also a general dietitian, and I work primarily with people who are trying to reverse disease or reverse conditions of obesity or overweight, as well as other things.
Great, because that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about. I also have here Susie Perez from our KRFY morning show and my executive producer. So she enables KRFY to offer these discussions. Hi, Susie, and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Dr. Joanne. You know, Medical Musing provides the KRFY listeners with interesting and informative interviews on, as you said, a variety of medical and health-related subjects. So we really thank you for giving us this show for our listeners here in North Idaho. And I wanted to let the listeners know a little bit about you before we start. Dr. Joanne Royans is a longtime KRFY volunteer, previously hosting segments of Otto's Eclectic Mix, and is now hosting Medical Musing, which does air every first and third Monday of the month at 8 a.m. She is a retired pediatrician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010. She previously worked in a pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years and then covered at Sandpoint Pediatrics once you moved here. As the medical and media spokesperson for the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, you contributed to print, online media, and radio and television. Joanne is a mother of four adult children. We are fortunate to have Medical Musing as part of our Monday morning programming. So thank you.
Okay, and thank you, Susie. To start off on the topic, we hear so often that heart disease, diabetes, and even the entity called metabolic syndrome, which includes an increase in blood pressure, abdominal obesity, increasing triglycerides, which are fats in your blood, and a decrease in HDL cholesterol, along with an increase in blood sugar, are so, so very prevalent today. We're bombarded with multiple ads for medications to treat these conditions. I'm always curious as to what the general public really understands. Non-insulin diabetic or dependent diabetes treatments were initially created to lower blood sugar, but now they're the miracle drugs for weight loss. Reports are being released frequently that attribute these drugs even to treating heart disease, fatty liver, sleep apnea, addictions, and lowering the risk of long COVID. While I initially thought of cardiac rehab as a the patients who have suffered a cardiac event. They've had some form of surgery, whether it be a stent or a bypass or a valve repair or a valve replacement or the electrical side of your heart. As my husband went to a cardiologist once and they said, well, there are plumbers and there are electricians. And the electrophys, and you're hearing an awful lot lately about atrial fibrillation. So the electrical side, the cardioversion, ablations, pacemakers for rhythm disturbances. And then after the cardiac event, there'd be a referral, or hopefully there'd be a referral for exercise so you don't get terribly deconditioned and to build your strength back. And that's what I thought of cardiac rehab. But it's so wonderful to know that cardiac rehab is really much more multifaceted. And we're looking at not only the exercise component, but the heart-healthy nutrition and the mental health support. So tell us a little bit about your program, and we'd love to hear what's here in North Idaho.
Okay, well, initially I started in a cardiac rehab that was our traditional model, which is mostly throughout the country, a lot of traditional, which is a patient gets 36 visits after an event. And you listed quite a few of them. Only certain things are covered when it's under Medicare. So heart attacks, stents, open heart surgery, valve surgery, heart failure, stable angina, another one. Unfortunately, we don't, or they don't cover for electrical things. Wish they did. So the traditional model, you get the 36 visits, like I said, and that is predominantly you're coming in, you're exercising, and you will have some form of education, though that education format is done differently throughout different facilities. Moving into what we started 4 years ago, it's called an intensive cardiac rehab. So you now get 72 sessions. And what that means is they come in each day, 3 days a week, and they are there for 2 hours. 1 hour is dedicated to exercise, and 1 hour is dedicated to education. So much more, it's not intensive in the way that we work you out harder. It's intensive that you get a lot more education to help give you a lot more tools to understand how not to have reoccurrences of heart conditions.
That's amazing. I mean, that sounds like an absolutely wonderful program.
And you've seen that it can make a big difference in this difference between the 36 weeks and adding the nutrition element and the lifestyle element to that education part has made a big difference.
A huge difference. When the program started, just for fun, I kept track of weight loss, and it was just much more exponentially higher than I'd ever seen in the 14 years or 15 years that I did the traditional model. And I think that's really attributable to we have a dietitian, and we have an amazing dietitian.
And she's right here.
And she's right here with us. And so she cooks for the patients once a week. That's a huge bonus because that was an obstacle for a lot of people. When you're trying to tell them to eat correctly and giving examples of certain foods, they may have never tried them. Now I get they get the opportunity to decide, do I like this or don't I? We show them that it's easy, not that we're trying to be, you know, chefs. So we make it not complicated. And I think that all the nutrition workshops and the nutrition very strong foundation that we give them in education on that. Biggest thing is label reading for a lot of people. They're like, I never knew. So they become very well-versed in putting foods down in the the aisle once they learn what to look for.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the great thing about the program is that it not only improves the health of those with cardiac disease, or their health is so multifaceted that it decreases your cholesterol and your blood sugar and affects your cardiac risk factors, of course, your blood pressure and your weight. So, I mean, those are all things that we all should, you know, the healthy lifestyle really should be what everyone is living by now.
Well, that's what I was wondering. If a doctor sees a patient with, we'll say, metabolic syndrome, I think that's a general way of saying potentially that heart event or that cardiac event is on the horizon. Let's do something ahead of time. Are there any programs that are what I would call proactive ahead of time?
Yes.
And how does that work? We're talking about reducing sodium or whatever
right.
it might be.
So what our clinic decided to do, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, we are a cardiac rehab clinic. And on Wednesdays and Fridays and Mondays, part of the day, they developed another program called Lifestyle RX. And that's what that's for. So we have an exercise physiologist on our team in cardiac rehab who started that along with the dietitian to see patients who do have those conditions, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, obesity, diabetes, prediabetes, to get that assistance.
So it would take a doctor's recommendation to get
into if you're gonna do it with insurance, and Rebecca now has through the practice has gotten credentialed on a lot of insurances. So yes, if you want to go through insurance, if insurance doesn't cover that, then it would be a self-pay.
It's interesting because those are the next things I was thinking about too. Number one, do patients get referred to you by a cardiologist, the hospital, or they self-refer? So I imagine the second program. Could be both, but the cardiac rehab, are they referred nowadays by their cardiologist?
So,
their cardiac surgeon?
A lot of our referrals come right through the hospital. Now that we have electronic medical records, things will automatically come over to us. So we had a really good system with Kootenai, which is a lot of our patients. Mm-hmm. They will establish people who live here in Sandpoint. And send those referrals on to us. That's a majority of them. And then after that, a lot of them will come from the cardiologist that's referring. Maybe a family practice, not as often. The ones we'd really like to see more of that aren't being seen are people with heart failure, people with stable angina. We tend not to see as many with stable angina because I think it's not thought of maybe to send them on.
That would help. That this program really would help.
Definitely,
you know, anyone, obviously. Definitely. And then the question is again: Medicare, Medicaid, mm-hmm. self-pay. So again, it depends on the medical diagnosis. Is that
right? And well, commercial usually sticks with what Medicare is doing, but you might find a commercial that I'm actually seeing commercial insurances now since the last probably 3 years. Including a coverage for cardiac rehab, which was not the case for the most part up here before. It was mostly Medicare patients, veterans patients. So, yes, you have to check with your insurance to see if it's a commercial that they cover it and what that coverage might be. But Medicare pays for it, usually 100% if you have a supplement. And then if you are Medicare Advantage, there's usually a copay involved in that.
Okay. It's kind of like the silver sneakers program.
That's what I was going to say.
Let's
too.
Be proactive, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at a potential, like you called it, the silent angina, mm-hmm. or the stable angina.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like we already know something's happening, but you know, if there's enthusiasm to change a lifestyle, you want to be able to give someone that opportunity because obviously they might not know what to do. They might know right. to do something, but not know what.
Right. And a lot of times patients don't know. Their physician may say to them, you need to eat better and you need to exercise. But a majority of people might not even know what that means. And so we very much inform them of what that means. And along with their significant others that are allowed to come to class with them.
Oh.
So oftentimes the family members, we've heard them say, everybody should know this information. And we agree, but unfortunately, that's not something that insurance will pay for everybody.
That's not always the case.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you have all these additional diagnoses like obesity, diabetes, hypertension, mm-hmm. the hyperlipidemia you mentioned, cholesterol, weight control, that are all going to be helped by this program. Do the non-cardiac people end up more in the Lifestyle RX program, or?
Well, we have both. So some of our patients transition over to Lifestyle RX to continue exercise and maybe see a dietitian. And then they've been working on, you know, just getting known marketing-wise of that this is available to physicians. And some physicians have been referring, to the program.
Wonderful.
Well, can we just for a moment, and you may be asking this question too, but I want to know more about the Lifestyle RX. And it's new. It sounds new to me because mm-hmm. I think that model is fairly new to be proactive. I'll say that word again. So maybe you can tell us what that looks like, Rebecca.
Sure, absolutely. I can talk about that. So Lifestyle Rx, like we're talking about, it is kind of a lifestyle and health and preventative care program. Okay, so I think it's probably true for most of the people that are listening that it's preferable that they don't have that heart attack or they don't have that cardiac event or they don't develop full-blown diabetes. But these things progress very slowly. People don't always note warning signs or understand the disease well enough to know that something is brewing. And so sometimes they do nothing, or sometimes they do a little of this, but not enough of that, and so on. And so the focus of Lifestyle Rx is really to help bring people along in terms of exercise, which is strength, flexibility, balance, movement, all of these things. And then on the diet side as well, the nutrition side. So a lot of times people have ideas about what constitutes healthy nutrition or good nutrition, but there's a lot of information out there on the internet that isn't that great. And people sometimes get sucked into things that don't help them or let them down or are too difficult to follow long term or aren't meant to be solutions to these problems. And so getting into a mode of stable, healthful, lifelong nutrition that is sustainable is very important. Mm-hmm.
So if I had a cardiac event and I was referred to your program, just walk me through, you know, how would you get started and then how the program goes?
Okay. Typically, like I said earlier, we would get a referral. We would call the patient and let them know that we've received that referral, tell them about the program and see if they are interested in pursuing it. We very much encourage it. We let them know, you know, your cardiologists really love it when you come to this program. We're eyes and ears for them when you're here because we're seeing them all the time. So if anything's popping up, we're the first to see it and we get right on it. So once they accept that intake is what we call it, they come in and that first intake, we sit down and we go over just, you know, their health history, how they got there from the patient's side, and then do an assessment on them, tell them about the program. And then from there on out, they start coming 3 days a week.
Wonderful. And then the first hour you said is exercise. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So they work with the exercise specialist, an exercise physiologist.
Right. And then the next hour is education. And our education format comes in multiple ways. We do videos. We are a Pritikin program, so that is done through Pritikin videos. We do workshops where one of us is talking about any one of the three pillars that we work on, which is exercise, nutrition, and mental health. And then on Thursdays, we do cooking school with them.
Oh, very cool.
And they really love cooking school.
And that's fun, isn't it?
Oh, she has a lot of fun with it.
Is.
So then do they go home? They exercise at the facility, and then do they go home with an action plan, sort of? Like, you know, with physical therapy, you're always, you know, given the exercise sheets and
right.
do these X number of days, times a week.
So it's dependent on the patient, what kind of conditioning they're in when they come to the program. But the general rule that we try to follow is, you know, as you're starting, if you haven't been exercising, you know, start with this 3 days a week because you're exercising for almost an hour and that might be a lot for somebody. So as they get more conditioned, then we will add, say, hey, on your days off, start adding some more time in. With the known requirement of all Americans should have 150 minutes of moderate exercise a week. So we give them those guidelines and then they work towards that. But the first goal is let me just get them up to be able to tolerate a half an hour of exercise, you know.
And so through the program, starting out every time they come in, which is three times a week, do you do a monitor of their blood pressure and listen to their heart and sort of track how they're doing moving forward, and is this effective?
Yes. So when they come in, they go right back and, you know, weigh themselves. So we keep track of their weight to make sure there's not any fluid retention happening primarily. Then they put on a monitor. So they are on a telemetry monitor while they're exercising, at least for the first 10 sessions, depending on their risk factors. And then when they sit down, we get their blood pressure. We take their blood pressure when they're exercising to make sure that it's staying within parameter. And then when they're done exercising, we take it again. So they're getting at least, you know, blood pressure three times during the session. So we're looking at trends, and then at the end of the month, we're sending the cardiologist a monthly report about how their patient is progressing. Then they can see, or we can make any notations of, hey, blood pressure is a little bit too high. What do you want to do about that? Kind of.
So part of the follow-up is you're following them, but then, of course, their own doctor will do the other stuff. You don't have to do the lab work like cholesterol or lipids. You have them.
No, yeah. And typically when people come in, we have a preliminary, like maybe when they had their heart surgery, they'll do their lab work. And
their
we'll,
baseline.
We'll catch, their baseline then. But they're only with us for about 3 months, so it's not usually drawn again unless, it's for whatever reason that it's been longer and they do.
Doctor says that they
right.
need it.
Right.
So it's about 24 weeks or a little bit shorter than that, I guess. I was dividing 72 by 3.
Actually, the average patient is about 14 to 15 weeks, but if you were following the program and not missing any, it'd be 12 weeks.
Okay. Because it's 2 hours a day, not just 1 hour.
Right, right.
So again, they're improving their endurance, their flexibility, their strength, and their health, and probably improving their weight. Mm-hmm. Just a little sidelight, when you were talking about the patient doesn't always know what to do or doesn't really follow through with what the doctor recommends. Have you heard the program Walk with the Doc?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was a cardiologist from Columbus that I know, David Savgar. And he started the program because, again, you can say to a patient, well, you really need to lose weight. You should cut down on your salt and this many milligrams. And people look at you like, well, how do I know how many milligrams? Again, it's back to label reading and what's the normal requirement. But anyway, I was amazed to read a little bit more about it because I participated in it when I was in Columbus. There are 574 centers or places now that have the Walk with the Doc program. So, it's been extremely successful. I have a friend in Hawaii who does it in her community. And they do a quick presentation, then they take a walk, and then they have a nutritious snack. So it's a really, really great program. When I was working as a pediatrician, the Ohio Academy of Pediatrics started to write a prescription for play. So, we write prescriptions for so many other things, and it was, play outside. It sounds really silly, but, it's one of those things that the more and more, certainly in the last 10, 20, 30 years, people have been much more focused on, we need to get back outside like we used to play when we were kids.
Right. And I think there's a doc in Clark Fork that does Walk with the Doc.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Tell us a little bit more, Rebecca, about the nutrition program.
Sure. Are you talking about the one at the cardiac rehab?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll start with that.
Yeah. The patients are educated on nutrition, specifically heart-healthy nutrition, all the way through their time that they are with us. As you mentioned earlier, we are doing in-house live cooking every Thursday, and that's completely a favorite because I think some of the comments I get most often from people are, I didn't know this could taste so good. I was worried because I'd never eaten that food before, but it's really delicious. And it kind of opens up a lot of people's eyes and palates to the option of eating new, different things that they've never tried before. So sometimes a comment that I get from people, especially when they're first in the program, and people that come in the program are worried and concerned, and this is all new, and it's frightening and painful. And sometimes they say things like, I guess I can never eat anything that tastes good again, right? All the fun foods are bad for me, and all the foods that are good for me, I'm not going to like. And they get the opportunity in our nutrition program to understand that that is far from true. So I think that's one of the most fun things that we do during the week. And then, of course, we're doing education throughout each week and each month.
Yeah, if a diet's too restrictive, there's always that, are you going to have good compliance? So do you give them options and how to modify things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last week I made cookies and ice cream in the place, okay? And that was very popular and very well received, both by the staff and by the patients. We enjoyed that very much, you know, and a lot of times, well, the comment that they made last week was, this is so good that, you know, it's healthy for me. It's so good that I'm fine with having this, not the treats that I know are problematic for me, right?
I'm sure that one of the things they learn also is that what you just described, that kale can actually taste good if it's prepared in the right way. So you're showing them how, but also that food is like medicine, mm-hmm. and it can make a difference. And probably in your process, you see pretty far into the program that they're starting to feel better and they're getting the food thing. I mean, I eat mostly natural food, and I do know that that's true. And so what is one of the best foods that you can eat for heart health, and what's one of the worst?
Oh, boy. Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
Or a kind of a category.
This is where people need to turn off their radio, right? One of the very best groupings of food that can be consumed by humans and also for cardiac health is just green leafy things, okay? These are good for people. One of the things that people don't understand about them is that green leafies open up the vessels, so they help them to dilate. And a lot of times patients that come into, you know, have had a cardiac event and come into a program are on medications that do this also, right? And so greens are a natural way of opening up that circulation and helping those vessels to relax and optimize blood flow. So they're really magical. You talk about food as medicine, and they really are. Okay. I guess some of the worst things, things that inflame the body and are hard on the body and are hard on the vessels and the muscles and the tissues of our body. Just think refined sugar is very hard on the body system, you know?
And I'm sure that also there's always a little thing you could say, eat good 99% of the time, and then you could have that one thing once in a while.
Yeah.
So highly processed foods, high in sodium foods, doesn't mean you can never have a pizza. It means that you have a pizza once in a while, not every week.
Absolutely, yeah. And also I think one of the most important things for patients to understand that they are in the driver's seat, mm-hmm. right? So if they have a sodium target, or they have a refined foods target, or if they know what their targets are, mm-hmm. they're much more likely to act proactively on their own behalf.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, you're creating savvy grocery shoppers. I mean, there's another group that I've been associated with called Local Matters in Columbus, and they also have some nutrition classes, and one is taking a tour of the grocery store, and again, shopping on the periphery mm-hmm. rather than, you know, the central part, because that usually is where the majority of processed food is. And there's been that true food kind of emphasis, too, so that means simply natural things like fruits and vegetables. On the low sodium and the low fat, is that sort of, again, the taste kind of thing? I've never eaten that, or is there going to be any flavor sort of thing? So what do you do to make things more flavorful?
Sure, absolutely. The number one thing you want to do is make use of herbs and spices, because that's really where flavor comes from, right? But also not forgetting things like acids, like vinegars and citrus juices that really cause flavors to pop on the tongue. These are very important things to do. Also, reminding people all the time that the desire for salt is a learned response, okay? You're not born with that. You train your palate and you train your brain to want salt or sodium to a certain level. And the higher we get that level of wanting, the higher it goes, okay? In the same way, if we start cutting back, and you can either do it cold turkey, which is sometimes unpleasant for people, but some people do it. If you go cold turkey, or if you start gradually bringing down the amount of sodium in your diet, your body will acclimate, your tongue will acclimate, and your brain. And your brain will stop asking for it, and your tongue will stop asking for it so much. And so a lot of times what people tell me is they'll say, I had this food that I used to love that's very high sodium. I used to love it and eat it all the time. And this time when I ate it, it was downright painful to consume, right? I did not get pleasure out of it. It was too much. So people allowing their bodies to adjust slowly but surely to the new norm is very important.
That makes a lot of sense. Do you have a recipe you could share for the best way that you like to cook kale?
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely. And we used to have, you know, kale grows great in North Idaho, especially the curly kale, which is the huge leaves that have some ruffled look to them. And they're wonderful. They're robust and delicious. So what you want to do, or what I like to do, and I did this for my kids growing up, okay? You take the kale leaves and you remove that back stem, and then you make what's called the kale chip, which is really just roasted kale, okay? Yeah. The key to that, though, is you wash it, because it's come from the garden, and then you dry it. You get it completely dry. You can put any kind of coating on it, or spices and so on. I like a damp, or you know, just a wet coating, I guess, of blended cashew nuts with herbs and spices, and then you rub this on it, and then you roast this, and it gets crispy. It is a chip, you know. And I used to make jokes about this because I would make four large trays at a time. I would leave them out because I was going to let them cool and crisp up, and before I would go to put them in the container, they were not there anymore because the kids would come through the kitchen and help themselves. And if you can get children from the ages of 4 to adulthood to eat kale, I mean, that's a tasty recipe, because you can't fool a kid. If they don't like the taste of it, they won't eat it. Yeah?
So, that's true.
Yeah. Making it with salt and Parmesan cheese probably isn't exactly.
But what about olive oil? Because I know I've seen kale chip recipes. You can brush a little bit of, you know, organic olive oil. It's a healthy fat.
So one of the greatest things about oils of any kind is that they spread. They spread, and so you really actually don't need a lot. So the kale, if you're doing the kale chips or whatever, you've already washed them, you've already dried them, and then the trick to that is putting a little bit of oil in the palm of your hand and then massaging it into, not stroking it on with a brush or something, but massaging it into the kale in a large bowl. You can get away with very little bit, which allows them to crisp up without getting heavy.
So there's your how to do kale chips recipe. You don't have to use a ton of olive oil, folks.
Yeah.
But, and it's super, super good for us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
100%. Your kids must be very healthy.
Well, I would say so. Yeah. And they're all interested in food and they all like to cook. So that's a
fantastic.
Good
you did well.
Yeah.
What about healthy fats in general? Just, and then we can move on. But you hear about avocado, olive oil, nuts.
Yeah. Nuts and seeds. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you want to focus on the healthy fats that happen that way in nature. So avocado is a great one. Nuts and seeds are great, but I'm not talking about like something that you might see on the top of the, you know, the bar top, a snack in a restaurant. You don't want the heavily salted and deep fried essentially nuts. You want raw nuts and seeds in their natural state. Also nut butters made out of these things are lightly roasted at home. These are incredibly healthy foods.
So yeah, when you're eliminating full fat dairy, there was one thing I read that obviously saturated fat, and coconut oil was listed, and I was a little, you know, confused myself, because for a while coconut oil was popular for whether it be cooking or to use instead of butter. So when it said that coconut oil should be eliminated, I was a little confused. So
okay, coconut oil, most oils, if not all oils that are naturally occurring, they're made up of many different types of fat. And coconut oil is one of these. A component of coconut oil is saturated fat. It also has the wonderful medium chain fatty acids in it. Mm-hmm. So it's a blend of things, right? But because of that saturated component, coconut, palm oil, and these things, they're tropical oils that are also saturated, like animal fats would be. You know, it's in people's best interest to use those with caution.
So to use less, and obviously red meat, butter, sugar, salt. I mean, we've
I bet there's some really good resource books also. If folks aren't going to your classes, there are books also all over the place on how to change your life and do it fun and in a healthy way to have a healthy heart. So
there's a group called Lifestyle Medicine. So prior to opening this clinic, that is something that I got involved in. And so people can go on there. You don't have to necessarily be a member, but there's some there's articles on there and there's some information there that's a resource. And that's basically what we do, lifestyle medicine. And there's lots of different people out there doing great things that give good information. Dr. Greger, he's got How Not to Age, How Not to Die, all those kind of books. And he bases his on a lot of the research that he just goes through.
The good news is we have a center right here in Sandpoint, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to have bad heart or, you know, you just want to be healthy.
Right.
Or if you have had a heart event, there's options to making sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have this here because we are the only one in the state of Idaho doing it right now. They are throughout the country, these clinics, but this is the only one to date in Idaho. And we have it here in Sandpoint.
You talked about rehab, talk about diet, but you also mentioned mental health.
Mm-hmm.
How does that fit into the comprehensive, you know, picture of the health?
So the reason why the mental health aspect is so important is it's very common after a heart event, surgery, heart attack, to maybe have some depression. Some of the medications can even cause that. So one, we want people to know that it's a normal feeling. And we also want them to recognize the symptoms of if they are getting depressed, anxious about things, that it's important to talk about it. So that's why we address it in education. Because if you are not in a good place mentally, then you really aren't able to do the other healthy lifestyles that you're trying to do. So it's an important leg of the program, very important. And people coming to the program, another really important aspect is that they are with people who have experienced these things. So the feeling of isolation and loneliness and just experiencing that really creates a social support for them, which is really important. We all love sitting back and hearing patients connecting and asking each other, well, why are you here? So you can see that really how important it is for patients.
So do you run that group or do you have another counselor?
Well, the Healthy Mindset workshops, I do. And that's all of the patients go through that. So they're when we do education, we're talking on any one of the topics of nutrition, exercise, or healthy mindset. So it's incorporated in the whole program.
So I know you cook on Thursday. Are you involved in the Monday and Tuesday sessions too?
Sure, sure. Yeah. We have nutrition education, live nutrition education on certain days of the month as well. Yeah.
As well as the patients sit down one-on-one with her at least once, if not more. We can individualize the program. If somebody needs a lot more direction with nutrition, then we can set it up that they see Rebecca more often for help.
Okay. I know initially when the Pritkin diet came out in what, 1970 or?
Probably maybe, around there, yeah.
It was very low. 10% of daily calories is fat, 10 to 15% protein, and 75 to 80 complex carbohydrates. Is that hard to follow, to be that low in protein, or is that how patients do with muscle strength? And are you still recommending the 10 to 15%, I guess, on protein?
Hmm. Do you want to answer that, Lori? Do you want me to?
You go ahead and answer.
Okay, so first of all, I don't, when I sit down with people, whether it's in the context of our program or in Lifestyle Rx, I give an individualized protein prescription depending on what that person needs, okay? So if somebody comes into me and they've had open heart surgery and they have a non-healing wound and they're not doing well in that regard, they're not going to get a low protein prescription because they need much because their body requires it, right? Okay. And so always looking at the individual and always seeing what they need is super important.
Mm. Yeah, I just kind of wondered if it was still as restrictive as it used to be. And then it was like South Beach eliminated fruit, which was always interesting because of the sugar. But obviously fruit is, again, one of those real foods, true foods. whatever. And
fruits and beans, so legumes and lentils, these sorts of things. These are two major food groups that are linked very strongly in the literature to longevity. I would never say don't eat fruit. That's not probably a wise idea.
Yeah, even with our diabetics.
Correct.
Yeah. Some people are afraid to eat fruit if they're diabetic, and we kind of reassure them that there's ways to do that that is not going to be hurtful to them.
Blueberries.
Yes.
Blueberries.
Yes.
It's on the list of good.
Yes, it is.
Again, imparting taste was using good spices and being a little bit creative. What about the non-salt, those products you can buy in the spice aisle? Sodium replacement, I guess.
Sodium replacement product is usually potassium chloride. So salt, table salt, is sodium bound to chloride, and potassium bound to chloride has a salty taste as well. It's different. I've tasted it myself. I've got a container of this in my cupboard at work because I like people to be able to taste it if they want. It has a very strange back taste. I don't enjoy it and I don't use it. Also, it's very important to understand that potassium chloride isn't necessarily safe in large amounts for anybody. It's not for everybody. It's especially if you've got any kind of kidney problems at all, that's not one you want to turn to. But a more important thing, I think, is remember that salt is a learned taste. And so my take on it, my idea for this, is that if we're trying to readjust our taste buds, using something in place of it that doesn't allow us to get used to the new normal is not maybe to our advantage.
So does the Lifestyle RX also have the mental health support program?
It doesn't have a counseling component to it. But I have definitely, in the course of working with people, definitely taken the opportunity to refer out to services, yeah.
Okay. And then in the cardiac rehab side, though, the mental health support works with how you live with a chronic disease and the healthy mindset
to help
with their stress and their anxiety and even communication?
Oh, definitely. So this week actually was called From Head to Heart, Positive Outlook. And we deal with, that's an aspect of it, is communication, not only with healthcare team, but your loved ones. And again, we incorporate any of their significant others into the program. So it's good if both are attending.
Great. How about tobacco cessation and drugs and alcohol? And
yes, we do address that. We don't get too many people, surprisingly, that that's an issue with the tobacco. If we do, then we give them education regarding that and ask them specifically, have you thought about quitting? Have you picked a quit date? Because we know that if we ask those questions more frequently, people are more prone to think about it and maybe act on it.
So when you say act on it, are there resources in our community for someone who really wants to quit tobacco, we'll say?
You know, the hospital used to have one. I don't know if it still exists because I believe that was way back. Dr. Lawrence was doing something with it. I can't remember. So I don't know that one exists anywhere in the community.
But for general addictions that would be detrimental to heart health, there are other resources.
As far as you mean substance
counseling,
abuse?
There are
counselors in town. I don't know who specifically deals with that, but there should be resources here.
Sure. So then with each patient, you're monitoring, obviously, the results in certain ways. Do you monitor like a decrease in needing blood pressure medicines or cardiac meds or their blood pressure? Obviously, you're following that.
So, yes, how that gets monitored would be, say I have a patient who came in and now their blood pressure over the first month is really drifting down to where it's not a good range for them. That might be because they've started incorporating exercise. They're watching their sodium. They've lost a little weight. They might not need as much medication. So then we're addressing that with the physician.
So really the program is treatment and prevention of further disease, which makes it very heart healthy and lifestyle healthy. So the success rate Are you keeping those statistics, though, on your patients? I'm just kind of curious.
So when you say success rates, what exactly would you...
Oh, I just didn't know if, like, the patient is, you know, you have a file necessary for, and then mm-hmm. what they came in with, with their blood pressure, their cholesterol. Their,
yes.
And then what it yes. is at the end of the program.
So our program in particular, we have a really high graduation rate, which we're pretty proud of, and I think that... One, being in a small town, they really feel cared for, and we are able to do maybe even more than just look at their heart. We help them with other things, too, because it's, like I said, small community. So when they come in, they fill out certain paperwork, and we're looking at those parameters of their vital signs. And then when they leave, we show them the outcomes. So very it's very often that they've lost weight. Had a gentleman today lost 2.25 inches in his waist, 6 pounds. Had another gentleman, his hemoglobin A1C went from 6.8 to 5.8 in 3 months, which is huge. So, yes, we keep track of all those outcomes for them.
It's like decreasing their LDL cholesterol and decreasing their triglycerides.
Yeah, if they've had a repeat, test. If not, then we, you know, just tell them how to monitor that and what to look for.
Their blood pressures and their weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite phenomenal that we have this program here in our community and the success rate that you've shown, because so many people, when they come out of an event or the doctors have said you're in trouble, you're going down the wrong street, there's no support. You can go on the internet and get, like you said, all kinds of information,
right.
Not necessarily the accurate information, but this sounds like a very comprehensive support, in the biggest term, support. And to move forward in a healthy way and possibly make a huge difference in someone's life.
It does, because, after an event, someone might be very apprehensive to exercise or to do anything for fear. Mm-hmm. They can come in there, the clinic, they're on a monitor. We can see that they're safely exercising. And if they're not, they're pushing too hard, we can back them off. But they feel more confident. We want them to come out knowing what to look for, feel confident that they can move on with their life. And oftentimes they say it's the best they've felt in years. So it's very rewarding for us to do what we do, and that we're very proud that we have it in the community here, that we can have it for the community.
And there's so much writing nowadays about increasing in heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, especially, that, again, as Susie said, and we are so fortunate to have you in our community. The monetary savings, too, it's interesting. People probably don't really think about that. But if you work on decreasing the incidence of chronic disease, then the healthcare costs would be decreasing for that person too. So they have their outlay to pay for the program, but in the end,
And that's something that sometimes people might not give as much thought to if they can't afford the program. Say their insurance doesn't cover it, or they have a copay. Is that sometimes you can't afford maybe not to do it because of what it's going to mean to you down the road, cost wise, out of work maybe for a period of time. So learning these things can really have a huge impact on your life moving forward.
That's wonderful.
You would think any insurance company would jump on this opportunity for their patients.
Yeah.
I have some friends that actually I play golf with in Columbus, and their insurance, I'm not going to promote one program or another, Silver Sneakers we mentioned. Actually, instead of Silver Sneakers, if you keep record of like all your payment for your golf times, or you're this time, or you're that time, and then you get a certain, it's like a health savings account with that insurance company that they actually reimburse you or decrease your rates for.
That's great.
Getting out and doing something. So we all need to get out and be more active, and we're hoping that we can impart the knowledge to so many people on heart-healthy nutrition. One thing, and then I think we're about at the end, but when you're on an anticoagulant, you're told not to eat certain of the green vegetables. So does that get really confusing for people?
I guess it would, especially if one is told not to eat any of the green vegetables, which is a little bit of an inaccuracy in the sense of we're to eat consistent green vegetables, and then you get a test done on your body in order to. And certain of the newer anticoagulants actually don't require that restriction.
Okay, so was it spinach? Was it spinach or all dark green?
Any dark leafy that's high in vitamin K.
That's right.
Yeah, so. But you can definitely eat these, and you should. You just need to be consistent about your intake.
Okay, and again, working with you and working with your doctors, the most important part, really. Well, Lori and Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me today, and thanks to all of you for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. Please tune in next month on March 3rd for our next Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. This is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho.